We are back. Welcome to Coast AM. And in a few moments, we're going to bring on Gerald Celente. Now, I'm sure you've probably heard of him. If not, he is the founder of Trends Research Institute. He's well-respected for his track record of picking business, consumer, political, and economic trends before they come to pass. It's his job to look into the future and understand how the issues and events of today will determine the trends of tomorrow. We're going to talk about quite a bit. We're going to talk about this depression that he's calling the worst ever. We're going to talk about cyber warfare. We're going to talk about economic martial law and much more. Now, you should know about Gerald that he considers himself a political atheist. He's unencumbered by political dogma, any rigid ideology, or for that matter, even what we might consider conventional wisdom. He's a bit of a maverick. His motto is think for yourself. And we're going to get into all these very dire and very profound predictions right after this. We are back. We're going to be talking with Gerald Celente in just a few moments. And there's breaking news about Hungary. The government is taking over the bank, and China has a crisis in the housing market. And there are all kinds of indicators that would suggest that there are some pretty dramatic changes happening. And remember, forearmed, forewarned is forearmed. And our next guest is someone who makes a living at it. In fact, the New York Post said about Gerald, if Nostradamus were alive today, he'd have a hard time keeping up with Gerald Celente. Gerald, welcome to Coast AM.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on, Rob.
The Nostradamus of our time. High praise indeed by the New York Post.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that, of course. You know, I've been at this for 30 years, and you know that saying, by the fruits, you know, by their deeds you shall know them. So, you know, we don't get it right all the time. Nobody does. But, you know, we our track record's a matter of record. So, you know, we think we take the blows, and we like them when they come out nice as well.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, you, of course, are the CEO of the Trends Research Institute. How long has that been in operation?
We've been around since 1980.
Okay.
We just celebrated our 30th year, and the Trends Journal, our publication, we've been having that out since 1991. So we've been at it quite a long time, and I have a number of books that I've written. So as I said, everything that we forecast is a matter of record.
Yep. And we're just at the beginning of 2012, and of course the economy is still in trouble. Although, I have to say, your predictions, I don't know that if you think that this is an indicator or not, but last Christmas season I thought people were talking about how well it came out for retailers and merchants. It certainly wasn't – didn't break any records, but it certainly wasn't the worst shopping season in history.
No, it wasn't, and there are a number of reasons why. One is that a lot of sales coming from the top. And the other really big crucial issue is people went deeper in debt to buy into the Christmas madness. And the other reasons are is that the Federal Reserve keeps funneling in, as we keep finding out, because of new disclosure acts and laws, that they've been funneling in trillions and trillions of dollars to keep this system going. And when you look at interest rates near zero, you can see what's going on. And, of course, anybody that has money in the bank, you know, what are you getting back on it? You're getting nothing. So what they're doing is it's one big Ponzi scheme, and they're just pumping it up, whether it's here or over in Europe. As a matter of fact, as you look at the European crisis unfold and the Eurozone crisis, particularly with the monetary union and the sovereign debt crisis, what did they do just before Christmas? Oh, the central bank, the equivalent of the Federal Reserve, just dumped in about $650 billion to banks that have no money, and they have to keep propping them up. So this is just keeps going on. And what we're saying is that after this Christmas season, you're going to start seeing a lot of red ink start to flow around the world, and the reality that there is no recovery, it's been a cover-up, starts to show.
Let's talk about Goldman Sachs for a second. They're guilty of manipulation of the markets. They've looted the national treasury, and they still get to borrow without interest. How does this go on?
Oh, it's very simple. You know, we're talking about Christmas sales just for a moment, and this is not a religious statement. Christmas is more than about Black Friday and people knocking themselves over to get a loss leader item, or about buying a lot of stuff that you can't afford. It's about Jesus Christ, the Prince of Peace. Now think about this. The only time the Prince of Peace becomes violent is when he picks up a whip to drive the money changers out of the temple. So if Jesus Christ could become violent about what's going on with the money changers, well, I could become angry. And you mentioned the Goldman Sachs gang. It's the money changers. They're at the head of the temple. Let's look at the temples. Look what they just did over in Europe. They got rid of Berlusconi, the prime minister. And who did they put in? Mario Monti, who I affectionately call Mario Three-Card Monti. Where's Mario from? Oh, Mario Monti, the former advisor to Goldman Sachs, international advisor to Goldman Sachs. Oh, they call him a technocrat. How about calling him a banker? Or we could call him the money changer. And what did they do over there in Greece? Well, they imposed these terrible austerity measures. I know Greek people, my God, what's going on with them is it's terrible. They're losing everything.
It's a revolution over there, yeah.
Yes. And who did they put in? Papademos. Couldn't be a banker, could he? Not only a banker, he even worked for the Fed over here before he went back over there. And you know who his roommate was? Well, his roommate was, when he was in college in the States, was Mario Draghi. Who's Mario Draghi? Well, he is the new head of the European Central Bank. You know, the central bank that just dumped in $650 billion to the money changers. And where's Draghi from? Are you not the Mario Draghi that was the head of the European branch of Goldman Sachs? Not him. And who was Clinton's Treasury Secretary that started this whole realm of deregulation, financial deregulation, that allowed the banks to become these casinos that gamble, that dismantle the Glass-Steagall Act that would have prevented them from doing what they're doing? Investment bankers. You know what a baloney word that is. Gamblers who make big bets and lose. Who was the guy that deregulated, put that deregulation process into works? Couldn't have been Robert Rubin from Goldman Sachs, could it be now? No. And who was the guy under Clinton? You know, I think he played Frankenstein on his off time. What was it, Henry Paulson? You know, the guy, you remember TARP program?
Sure.
How we had to throw the TARP out there to save the too big to fails? And I always get a kick out of these people, by the way, that say, oh, you know, people don't like capitalism. Hey, guess what? Too big to fail isn't capitalism. It's called the merger of state and corporate powers, called fascism. Now, Henry Paulson, wasn't he the CEO of Goldman Sachs? And remember that guy, you know, who just brought down MF Global, the former senator and governor of New Jersey? Wasn't he the head of Goldman Sachs, John Corzine, before Paulson took over when he became the Bush Treasury Secretary? But the Rothschilds, Rob, would be jealous of what the Goldman Sachs gang is pulling off. The bankers are in control of every temple, the temple in Athens, the temple in Rome, the temple in Washington, one after another. Who's Obama's chief of staff? Oh, it couldn't have been Bill Daley, could it? Bill Daley from that wonderful Chicago machine? Oh, yeah, where was he before that? Oh, he was the vice chairman of J.P. Morgan Chase. Only an imbecile would not see how the takeover has happened.
Well, you know, Gerald, speaking of Jesus, you sound like you're whipped up into a bit of a state of righteous indignation yourself.
Well, that's what I said. If Jesus Christ could become violent, I could become angry of what's happening to my country.
Okay.
And being robbed in front of my eyes.
Well, it is. It is something to get angry about. I mean, this Occupy, or as you call it, Occupy movement really is about the disenfranchised. It's about people who just had enough and there's nothing else to do, so they are willing to perform an act of civil disobedience.
And it's worldwide.
Yeah.
And that's what people aren't putting together. And this octopi, as we call it, like a tentacled animal that you cut off one, another one spreads somewhere else. It's going on worldwide, but they give it different names. So let's go back a year ago, Rob.
Okay.
And you had Tunisia. Remember Tunisia?
Yeah.
The Tunisian Revolution. What did the mainstream media comes out with? It's a bunch of them Islamo-fascists. And then it spreads over to Egypt. Oh, it's the Muslim Brotherhood. And then it goes over to Yemen. It's those Al-Qaeda forces behind there. We got our guy Saleh, he's our man against Al-Qaeda fighting the war on terror. They're trying to overthrow him. And then it goes over to Bahrain. You know who is Bahrain. It's them Shiites from Iran that are making all this disturbance over there. And then it goes into Syria. Then it goes into Morocco. Then it goes into revolutions, as you mentioned, uprisings virtually weekly in Greece. Student protests in Italy. They take to the streets in the UK this past summer.
But it wasn't.
Oh,
it was hooligans. It was just a guy with a fruit stand.
Yeah, that's all.
That's how it started.
That's all it was, right?
Yeah.
So what they do, this is class warfare. It's as old as history, and it's going on in front of our eyes. It's all over the place. And it's not going to stop because you nailed it. It's the 99% versus the 1%. You're looking at the inequality in America. As we speak, according to the CIA fact book, we rank along there with Zimbabwe. It wasn't like this. This was the country where the middle class could live comfortably. That's gone.
Mm. Yeah. Well, and what's been the response? I mean, there are people. It's not just hippies or people who are don't have a job or anything like that. It's Pulitzer Prize winners. It's academics who have lined up with the Occupy movement, and they are being arrested right along with them.
Well, again, that's what they do when things start getting out of control,
mm-hmm.
which really brings us to the first trend. It's called economic martial law, and it's being instituted worldwide. You mentioned what's going on in Hungary. That system's collapsed. The economic system is shot. Their currency is crashed. They need more money from the IMF. They took over the banks, the government. They're cutting out freedom of the press. This guy in there with his new majority, Orban, he just redid the whole constitution. It's not a democracy anymore.
Hungary has a new constitution.
Yes, they just rammed it through. And legislators chaining themselves to fences, massive protests. They're doing what they want. This is what happens when countries start unraveling. They put more controls on you because they know the people are going to take to the streets.
Yep.
You know, my saying is a guy that was born in the Bronx is that when people lose everything and have nothing left to lose, they lose it.
Mm-hmm.
And when the money stops flowing down to the man on the street, the blood starts flowing in the streets. So what we are at now, as I said, the first top trend of 2012 that we're looking at is called economic martial law. The systems are collapsing. You do not fix them by dumping more money on top of them. You have a third mortgage? How about a fourth? That's going to solve the problem. So what we're saying is watch out for a bank holiday.
Yeah, and you don't fix it by just putting more police on the streets. How about this for a suggestion? Instead of responding to the Occupy movement by tear gas and everything else, why not get a jobs program for people under 25, forgive student loans, and put a moratorium on foreclosures?
As I said, when you look at who's running the government, it's not in their interest. These are money junkies, and they range from psychopaths to sociopaths to money junkies across the line. You know, look at the Republican debates. And again, as you mentioned, I'm a political atheist. So I make it very clear, I would vote for Ron Paul. I don't agree with a lot of things he says, but on the major issues about ending the war.
Well, he's the only guy that's talking about, you know, reeling in the Federal Reserve.
And reeling in the Federal Reserve, bringing all the troops home, and stopping these senseless wars, whether in Afghanistan, Iraq, the new predator drone wars, the mission creep that continues to go on, and the war on drugs. But going back to why they don't do the things that you're asking, look at what the candidates are saying one after another. They're all ready to bomb Iran.
Mm.
They're all ready to, you know, drop the big one. And here we are. You know, we just lost the Iraq war, if anybody doesn't want to call it what it is, after $1 trillion spent, 5,000 U.S. Soldiers killed, an estimated million Iraqis dead, the country destroyed, and we have probably hundreds of thousands of wounded soldiers that have returned from tours of duty that are suffering either physical or mental wounds. And now they want to start another one? Oh, brilliant. Yeah, we'll win that one too, won't we? Like the one they're winning over in Afghanistan. So it's not in their DNA to do these kind of things. So when we're talking about military, economic martial law, they're going to clamp down on us. The system is running out of control, which brings you to the next one, and that's Battlefield America. As I said, in every country, whether it's Italy, whether it's Greece, whether it's in the UK, they did it after the riots this past summer, they passed more draconian laws to rein in the people. And now what do we have in front of us now, Rob? The wonderful National Defense Authorization Act. And guess what? There's a term in that act about arresting belligerents.
Yeah, it's Orwellian. Yeah.
Belligerents. I could be a belligerent, and so can you.
Mm. Yeah.
And the military can now come in, bash down our doors, take us away. No charges, no trial, no jury, no lawyer, no habeas corpus. They could ship us overseas to torture us. They could torture us right at home, or they could blow our brains out. So when you're looking at what's going on around the world, we are in a depression. They're in a depression in Greece. They're in a Great Depression in Spain. They're in a depression in Ireland and Portugal. They're in a depression in Hungary. There are bank runs in Lithuania. Hey, how you like the way Lady Gaga dressed on New Year's Eve? Hey, you see Mayor Bloomberg? This, you know, what I'm saying is they're keeping the news out of the news.
Well, that's nothing new. I mean, people who really want to know what's going on certainly don't look to the mainstream media. I mean, this has always been the case.
But even people that want to know the news, that are looking outside the news, it's very difficult for them to start putting all the pieces together, what's going on all over the world, and then making sense of it, which is essentially our work. And it's 24/7. There's no stopping. And it's reading and learning and on and on and on. But what we're looking at, Rob, we're looking at the beginnings of the first great war of the 21st century. I mentioned martial law, economic martial law.
Yeah.
In 2009, when Obama got elected, I had said, and could have been on George's show, and I was on many, many shows talking about this, that the economic conditions are so severe, and again, they were covering it up. We didn't know the Federal Reserve was dumping trillions of dollars into pumping it up, that they would call a bank holiday. And as the MF Global crisis was unfolding, and I'm doing research, I've come up with John Corzine's name, and he's running for re-election of governor of New Jersey. This is in June of 2009. Obama team is sworn in on January 2009.
Yeah.
And who's campaigning for him but Joe Biden? And there's Joe Biden. Anybody could go on YouTube and find it. Joe Biden saying to the crowd, you know, the day we were sworn in, the first challenge that we had, the number one priority that we were looking at was whether or not to call a bank holiday. And then Joe says, that's right, a bank holiday.
Well, we're going to talk about the bank holiday. We're going to talk about how deep this rabbit hole goes and who's trying to pull the strings and who's responsible for this. Not to mention, hopefully, some solutions that we can all implement in our own lives. You're listening to Coast AM. Our guest is Gerald Celente. We're coming right back. Stay right there. We are back on Coast to Coast AM talking with Gerald Celente about what he calls economic martial law. And we're putting a spotlight on these international bankers that have thrown the world economy into chaos. Much more right after this. We're back talking with Gerald Celente. And Gerald, right before the break, you were talking about the bank holiday. And is there a thought you wanted to finish on that?
Yes. So here you have Joe Biden telling the nation, you know, this should have been headline news, that they were talking about a bank holiday. This is no holiday. What happens is when they close banks down, as they did in 1933 in the U.S. and as late at last as Argentina back in the beginning of the millennium, they devalue the currency. Could you imagine what would happen if the banks were closed and you can't get your money out? And this is going on for days. So what they did back in the 1930s, the dollar was pegged to gold. They made people sell their gold to the bank. I believe it was at $20.52 an ounce. When they reopened the banks up, they repegged the price of gold to the dollar at $35 an ounce. So you lost 40% or more of your purchasing power. So with that's a devaluation. That's chaos. It'll be chaos now. That's why, to me, they've put in place the National Defense Authorization Act, which also overturns the Posse Comitatus Act of 1878, that now allows the military to take over police duties. This thing is it's unraveling worldwide. Look, as I mentioned, you're seeing all of these protests around everywhere.
Yeah.
How could people not put it together? I'm looking online, you know, as the break was on, and here's the headline in Bloomberg. Asian stocks decline as European concerns overshadow U.S. economic data. European concerns. Concerns? They have $7 trillion worth of debt they have to pay off just in this year on bad loans and interest. They're not going to be able to do it. And that's only among the G7, according to Zero Hedge. So this is really, there's no way of salvaging this. So what happens is, the bigger the blow up, the more they screw up, the harder they clamp down on us. So what I'm saying to people, and I make it very clear, I do not give financial advice. And you know my motto, think for yourself, which was taught to me by my dear father, may his soul rest in peace. Anytime I'd repeat what anybody else was saying, he'd say to me in Italian, Papagallo, parrot, stop repeating what everybody else is saying and think for yourself. So what I'm saying, this is the way I think. You should think for yourself. But for me, and I, matter of fact, I just told a story recently. I've been taking sums of money out of the bank, putting it in other places because I'm concerned. And I try to withdraw money out of HSBC Bank in Kingston, New York. I called up a day ahead of time, told them how much I wanted. I told them the time I'd be in. I couldn't make it at that time. My assistant called them up and told them what time I would be there. I went there with the check. It was like I never called up. The woman says, you have to talk to the manager. Penny demo. I go to sit down across the desk from her. You know what she said to me, Rob?
What did she say?
First words out of her mouth. This is a sizable sum of money that you're withdrawing. What are you going to do with it?
Well, okay, was it over $10,000?
Yes.
Okay.
What am I going to do with it? So I said, none of your business. So she said, that's no way to start a conversation. Oh, I said, excuse me, how about none of your damn business? How dare you ask me what I'm doing with my money? You didn't ask me how I got it when I put it in here. And it starts, I'm making a very long story short. And this is after talking to all, then this becomes a scene. And now I'm talking to people throughout the HSBC network. What am I doing with, you know why they don't want you to take out this money?
Why?
It's very simple. They don't have the money. They need every penny they could get. That's why the European Central Bank is giving the European banks money. That's why it would be fraud, by the way, as we found out that the Federal Reserve, in just one day, the Morgan Stanley guys, the Goldman Sachs gang, the J.P. Morgan Chase criminals, as they're telling us back in the height of the financial crisis in 2008 and 2009, they're making public statements saying how sound their balance sheets are, as in one day they borrowed $1.5 trillion. That's called fraud.
Well, I thought banks were mandated to keep a certain percentage of money in their branches.
Peanuts. Peanuts is what I'm saying. Yeah, they have that money. They're mandated to have that. But the junk that they have on their balance sheets, the money that they owe, what they need to do to keep this thing going, they want to keep their hands on every penny they can get.
So you finally got your money, I'm guessing.
Oh, I got my money.
Sure. Sure.
But this is, by the way, this is the third time it's happened to me.
Yeah.
I had two other incidents, and I wrote about them with the KeyBank. And by the way, when I mention this on the air anywhere or write about it, I get floods of emails from people telling me the same thing happened to them.
Oh. Well, okay, who controls America's debt right now?
Who controls this? The Federal Reserve is in control. They're running the country. The bankers, again, the money changers are in control.
Mm-hmm.
Let's call them by the – and we could call them money changers, loan sharks. I mean, we could give them the names that, you know, are applicable.
Okay. And this group is certainly – you might call them without conscience, but they're not without intelligence. It's not in their best interest for the whole system to go belly up. They want to manage this, not
– trying to manage it. That's what I'm saying.
So why is it getting out – so why is it spiraling out of control and crossing international boundaries? Was this something that even they didn't account for?
Of course. You know, they may be intelligent, but they're money junkies, just like a heroin addict. You have no bounds or boundaries. Meth, you name the drug. Money's their drug. They never get enough of it. Look at this guy, John Corzine, who took down MF Global, of which I got nailed on it.
Yeah,
look,
you had some.
He's worth $500 million.
Yeah.
$500 million. $500 million, and he has to go raid segregated accounts? It's a money junkie. They have no conscience.
Hmm. Well, you were a victim of this MF Global collapse. What happened there?
Well, what happened was I buy gold in different ways.
Okay.
I buy coins, and I buy bullion, and one of the ways I buy bullion is through contracts. I make an agreement, and I buy a contract. For example, I had April 2011 contracts that I bought gold at $143 an ounce.
Okay.
Because I believed the price of gold was going to go up, of course, which it did. And I was going to pick that gold up in December, last month.
All right.
And throughout from April to December, to November, actually, I kept building my account, putting enough money in the account, making different moves to keep building the account to where I had enough money in the account almost.
It was close to $1 million?
Delivery of all of my gold in November.
Say it was close to $1 million?
No, it was over six figures. Just
okay.
Say that.
Okay.
And I'm ready to take delivery, and I get a call in early November from my broker, and I realized the word broker means that you're broker than when you started. That's how they got you these guys' names.
Yeah.
And he tells me I have a margin call. And I said, what are you talking about? I got a ton of money in my account. He said, didn't you hear what happened with MF Global? I said, yeah. He said, what does that have to do with me? I used to trade with a company called Lindwaldock. MF Global bought them out. It never even occurred to me. I look back at my statements. I got new statements maybe about, you know, 2 months before this thing collapsed.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't have made any difference to me anyway, because there's never been a time in the entire time of the Chicago Mercantile Exchange where this has ever happened, where traders lost money. So what happened was now they emptied out my account.
Okay.
And then, you know, that gold that I bought at $1,443 an ounce?
Yeah.
The trustee in the courts, they decided that the day MF Global went bankrupt, that's the day that they would put the price of gold that I had. So it wasn't 1443. They sent me a thing, a corrected statement. It was $1,765 an ounce.
And it wasn't just
so
your
now
account.
Now I'm responsible for gold that I bought at 1443 that I have to take delivery within just a couple of weeks. And they repegged it. So I had, I took a huge losses.
Well, this wasn't just you. It was everybody's. I mean,
everybody in the business.
Yeah.
And then here's the other big lie, and I've said this one out with videotape. The Chicago Mercantile Exchange, that CME Group, is Terrence Duffy, the CEO, on a videotape a year ago, saying that the CME guarantees every trade to $100 billion. $100 billion. It's right on video. How come they couldn't cover $1.2 billion? It goes back to the story I was saying. They don't have the money. A lousy $1.2 billion could have quieted this whole incident. They have wrecked the trading, the commodities and option markets. Over $1.2 billion? Where Terrence Duffy is bragging in that videotape that anybody could find on YouTube, that they do 800, now remember this number, $800 trillion worth of deals a year. And they have $100 billion to back up the losses. Collateral.
Yeah.
They can't come up with $1.2 billion. The money's not there. The Ponzi scheme is over. And it's the last guy to get the money is the one that loses. And that's why I'm saying, for me, that's why I realize now in doing the research after, it's not only MF Global. It's all of this deregulation I was talking about earlier that began under the Clinton administration with this, you know, rehypothecation and all of these phony baloney loopholes. You're as only good as the last loophole. I don't care who your money is with.
Yeah.
Unless it's in your pocket, you don't own it.
Well, who's next? Which big firm is going down
it's
next?
It's hard to say which one,
okay.
But we believe it's going to come out of Europe.
Okay.
The European banks are in terrible trouble, and we believe it's going to be the crash of those banks first. And then when it happens, now this is the way the game works. The United States will start blaming, as this headline does, Asian stocks decline as European concerns overshadow U.S. economic data. So in other words, we have all our problems here. What is the what is the national debt up to now? What, $15 trillion? We just saw the super committee. I love the names they give themselves, super committee. The same old bunch of political hacks getting paid to do another job that they will do wrong. Look how they fix that one. Look at how they're solving all our problems. So what's going to happen is the United States is going to conveniently blame first Europe, then China, for all of our economic woes. We're moving into the war zone. You can see it unfolding. So all I'm saying for myself, I'm very heavily invested in gold. I also own silver, and I've taken the cash out of the banks. I only have operating expenses and move it into other locations in other countries.
So where is the safe place to put the...
For me, as much as I dislike what's going on there, Switzerland is still the best bet for me.
Okay.
I'm concerned about Singapore because they're too closely tied to China, and I'm looking at the data coming out of Singapore, and that thing's unraveling pretty quick over there, too.
What about Canada?
There aren't a lot of safe haven places to go to for money.
What about Canada? Their currency is...
Canada is too tightly tied to the United States. And so if the United, you know, there was one time when there was a firewall between both countries, but not anymore. So whether it's a civil issue, a political issue, if you're in Canada, you're as good as almost being in the United States.
Mm. Well, people love the idea of buying gold. It sort of hit its peak. It looks like it's sort of come down a little bit. Where is it going to go from here?
I'm in the camp that believes it's being manipulated.
Okay.
And I say that, and this isn't a conspiracy theory, to give you an example of the level of manipulation, let's look at one of the kings of Ponzi, Bernie Madoff. Again, anyone could do this. You go to February 27, 2011, New York Magazine. Bernie does an interview over the telephone from jail. And this worthless interview, other than, you know, how sorry he is, blah, 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 and he says two things that stuck in my mind. One was that as he began, got into the Wall Street movement there and became a major player, he realized that the game is rigged for the club, his words. Number two, he said, it's all one big Ponzi scheme. That's all it is. The United States economy, Bernie, is saying, is nothing more than one big Ponzi scheme. That's all it is. Not only the United States, it's in Europe. It's in China. You look now what's going on with Chinese housing prices. This is going to be the housing bubble that makes the housing bubble burst to the United States seem like a tiny pop.
He's saying that
they are empty cities.
Every dollar printed creates $10 of debt.
You got it.
And tell me about the commercial real estate market. Where's that going to go this year?
You see, that has thrown me off. I would have thought it would have collapsed a while ago. But again, I didn't know what was going on behind the scenes.
Okay.
One of the Fed games was called TALF, T-A-L-F. And that was another loan package that they were shooting out to these big financiers to keep commercial going. I'm not too sure when commercial is going to collapse. But when you know it's going to collapse is when the retail sector goes. And the retail sector is going to unfold after, I believe, the European and the Chinese. And you put the whole thing together. If Europe and the United States don't buy, and Europeans aren't buying much junk anymore, the Chinese don't, Indonesians, the Vietnamese, they're not producing. If they're not producing, the Australians, the Brazilians, Chile, they're not sending in natural resources to China for production. It's all connected. So what you need to do, what we do, is we're looking at the weakest points first. The United States was the weakest one for a long time, but we have that concept of continuing to print money. And again, you look at gold prices. What were they last year at the new year? They were about 14-something. What did they end the year at? 1,600. What did the Dow do? You know, the Dow, when you adjust it for inflation, you know, you're looking at the S&P actually went flat. You're looking around, you know, 1999 levels. It hasn't moved. Look at the NASDAQ. The NASDAQ crashed at 5,000. You know, what's it trading? About 2,500, 2,600. You know, so the only play to me that made any sense was gold. And I believe that they're just going to continue to print money. They're going to continue to devaluate it. And that the only commodities that are going to be worth anything are the precious metals, silver included, and diamonds. You look at the price of diamonds going up for the same kind of reasons. People are collecting them because this is as old as history.
Well, aren't diamonds even more manipulated than gold? I mean, isn't De Beers sitting on literally, you know, silos full of diamonds that they're just holding on to keep the prices high?
Well, again, how they're doing it and whether or not they're doing it, the fact is that a lot of people around the world look at these as safe haven currencies or trading mechanisms, because when the paper isn't worth the digital paper it's not printed on, these and I'm just giving you the other, you know, the different commodities that people find precious for trading. Oh, and by the way, the reason why I don't think gold is a bubble.
Okay.
I've been buying gold. I've been trading gold since 1978. My first buy was at $187.50 an ounce.
Wow.
When I was trading back then, and I also, having said I bought it at that price, I also bought it at the highest price it hit in January of 1980,
okay,
during the trading day at $175, $875 an ounce. So anyway, when that collapsed back then,
yeah,
1980, there was the Soviet Union, wasn't there? There was nothing east of the Berlin Wall doing business. There was no India. India was, what was India? That was the place where Gandhi came from. They weren't doing much business. China. Yeah, they were behind. They had their own iron curtain, the bamboo curtain.
Yeah, agriculture.
They weren't doing business.
Yeah.
The point that I'm making, Rob, gold has gone global. It was only being traded basically in the United States back then.
So gold is still a safe bet and silver still a safe bet?
To me, yes.
In which form?
Well, you know, I like for gold, I like 10 ounces, like coins, mm-hmm. and 33 kilos. I don't go bigger than that because every time you have to change it, you have to break it down.
All right, well, hold it right there. I'm going to ask you about silver. Because there's different ways to buy this stuff. It gets really tricky really fast, but hopefully we'll clear up some of the confusion. We're talking with Gerald Celente. This is Coast to Coast AM.